Though beauty columns ask my advice, though I was Miss America twice, still you got me outsmarted, 'cause I can't get started with you.
Jazz clubs, I've been a star. Even put new strings on my guitar. So many tunes I've charted, still I can't get started with you. Across the ping pong table, I'm feared. I even grew this wonderful beard. I come on like a swinger, but you don't let me linger with you. I play in tune. My beat is reliable when I croon. The ladies get sighable, but when it's June, it's undeniable. I get winter from you. I've been consulted by Richie C. On every tune, I'm in the right key. My hair is neatly parted.
Still, I can't get started.
This is the winning show from May the 6th, 2003. We are back bringing you another weekly edition of our ever-present continuing mission to bring you the latest and greatest news about the Linux and open source community. We've got the whole crew back tonight. Doc's back from his wanderings, so we're going to have a full house tonight. We, as of yet, aren't quite sure if our guest is going to show up. No worries, though. We've got plenty of news lined up just in case the guest doesn't show up. But for now, we'll presume he's going to call in sometime around 30 past the hour. But we'll go ahead and just keep on moving forward until then. So, first off, Doc, welcome back.
Thanks. I just kind of screwed up last week. I was just telling us privately, but we might as well make this public too. I was on the East Coast, and I just lost track of the time. You know, instead of I was thinking it was a different hour or some other thing like that.
Yeah,
there I was, but I got plugged into the whole the Wi-Fi scene there, because when you put your laptop up to your window in Manhattan somewhere, you're suddenly picking up like nine Wi-Fi signals, and you can get on the net all over the place. It's just, and there's a group called New York City Wireless, and there's a link pointing to them on the Linux Show site, talking about what they're doing. So the next big story I want to work on, and listeners are feel free to contact me at Linux Journal, is going to be on Linux and wireless, and especially around New York. The architecture of New York lends itself to, you know, the same thing that makes the streets noisy is also makes it conducive to ricocheting Wi-Fi signals. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well,
stuff.
Let's talk more about that later, because
yeah.
Even though it's not on my list, there is some interesting things people have been emailing me about Wi-Fi and its impact on the situation with both cable and DSL that's in the news this past week. So let's talk that up more. But how are you doing tonight, Arnie?
I'm doing fine. I just got off the 10 freeway. I'm in transit.
So you're almost home, huh?
Almost home. Yeah, we're within a mile here, and but we I got hung up at school late today, and I'm transportationally challenged. My truck blew ahead, and I'm having the expert mechanics at Fontana High School, the students at Fontana High School, repair the head.
One of the listeners in the chat room has asked us if you'll give a traffic report this evening, Ernie.
Oh, the 10 was free. The Interstate 10 was free northbound, east and westbound, although there was a little bit of congestion at the Interstate 15 interchange. How's that?
Yep. And coming to us from the other end of the country, Russ Pavlicek, how are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, hanging in. Things are wild and woolly out here. Doing pretty well, though.
Now that the war has wound down, things are finally getting back to normal around the D.C. area, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's resuming its normal state of chaos, but outside of that, everything's going pretty well. Spring has sprung, which means that you break into a sweat once and again, as it's trying to figure out whether it's winter or summer.
Russ, could you send some of that sweat our way? And we could use some over there here on the West Coast. Dude, we haven't been above 70 in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then... And then not very much at all.
Well, I'll tell you, we'll have plenty of excess heat this summer, I'm sure. So,
we'll be able to send some your way too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's delightful here where Kevin and I are. The Midwest has once again delayed its norm, and we're having just the most marvelous spring. It's just wonderful here. Not too wet, not too dry, not too hot, not too cold. It's just pretty damn perfect for the Chicago area. In fact, the weather has been so mild, and we've gotten just enough rain that if you look around Chicago, it sort of looks like Ireland. Everything is just bright green here. And normally we don't get that kind of a bright visual this time of year, but it's been really beautiful. But let's go ahead and jump right into the first section of the Linux show and talk about news. And, well, Ernie, why don't you jump in with your first story?
Oh, great. I'm not even in my office yet.
oh, that's right, Ernie. You know what? We'll go over to Russ.
Let me go over to Russ.
Okay, Russ, why don't you pick up in your first story?
Sure. Why don't we tear open the first can of worms, and that has to do with the three magic letters of SCO. and I know...
We can spend about 15 minutes on that tonight, I think.
Yeah, because there's a lot of links here that aren't mine, I'll tell you. But, you know, the one that that I clued in on was the fact that IBM, as expected... is denying that it's running around stealing intellectual property from SCO. But the interesting part, at least on the story that you'll find on the Linux Show webpage, is that pretty much like SCO did, they're not talking very much detail-wise. They're not offering any sort of explanation for what SCO is seeing, and of course
there is no explanation.
No, is that not also because SCO didn't SCO hire Du Bois?
Yeah,
yeah. I think they know that they're in for a heavy legal wrestling match.
Yeah, and
so.
It makes sense, but from a spectator's point of view, for both the SCO complaint and the IBM response, at this point it's a rather thin-boned, you know, that there isn't much meat there for people to ponder over. So it's kind of like the name-calling before the brawl starts.
We're at the glowering stage.
Yeah, that's about it, because it doesn't put forward any sort of notion of...
But think about the weigh-in.
Yeah. You know.
On one side, IBM, on the other side, SCO. There's a way in for you.
What bothers me about this case is that SCO seems to be doing some. They claim that they have, I think, lines of code from intellectual property from SCO appearing in Linux will probably be as rare as Iraqi weapons of mass destruction right now. I don't know. It's they keep on saying they exist, but are we to see proof soon?
Well, if you're referring to the code, Arnie...
The code, yeah.
Yeah, if you're referring to the code, there's been a lot of talk on my local lug list here in Chicago about some of the things that people were projecting as potential problems. And if you really do open up the Linux kernel and you search source code for individual lines of code that come fairly close to other individual lines of code in Unixware, it is theoretically possible when you're talking about really, really common statements within code, okay? And so...
But idioms, common idioms, appear all over in code, any coder knows this.
And that's right, but it all depends upon what is, okay? And
I mean, all of us have read Knuth, you know?
but it really depends upon how the court is going to interpret that. And if it turns out some really ignorant judge gets put into this case, it could turn into a real harassment situation. Frankly, I think this action of claiming that Unixware code is well, in the words of Darrell, widespread copied throughout the Linux kernel, I think this is now the line in the sand, frankly.
There's only a few ways, a certain number of ways you can do a bubble sort, for instance.
Okay.
But
I think this is the line in the sand. I think it's now over for SCO in terms of any true involvement with other members of the Linux community. Can you imagine what the people over at SUSE feel like right now, looking at these people as potential partners in United Linux?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to be, you know, doing backflips in anger over this utter nonsense that's going on. So I really think that this is a very, very important step in this process, and I believe this is the definitive line in the sand from which SCO cannot go back. It's now they either have to win this case or they're through, because they will never, ever get cooperation and recognition from the rest of the Linux community from this point forward. It's over.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing is that when they change from Caldera to back to SCO, name-wise, that did mark a pretty significant change in the way they seem to view themselves. And I wonder if this is seen, inside some respects, we talked before about it being an exit strategy for the company. I wonder if it's, in their eyes, if it's more of an exit strategy in the Linux world, sort of saying, well, we're only making money off the SCO stuff, so let's try to bleed the Linux world as best we can and continue doing our SCO thing.
Well, that's exactly what angers me now, because it has now turned into SCO sucking what little available cash there is. Okay, forget IBM. IBM's got plenty of money. But, you know, look at Red Hat. Red Hat is barely profitable. They have worked their tails off getting that company into a business model that is workable and profitable, and they've done a great job doing that. And here comes along SCO, who is incapable of making a profit, and they have to do this and suck what money Red Hat has fought for away from the company. I think it's despicable behavior, utterly despicable.
Yeah, another thing about this, I think SCO, one of the things SCO is doing, you mentioned Red Hat. What's SUSE's health, and could they stand a lawsuit? And I think SCO maybe is trying to, you know, maybe kill a couple Linux vendors and, you know, to basically get rid of some competition here. And that's underhanded.
Well, I think the line in the sand, Arnie, is to kill Linux.
Well, you know, I don't think that, Arnie, the thing that you put forward, I'm not quite sure that works given the consortium business, the United Linux business. Most of the technology that SCO is trying to sell itself at this point under the Linux name is being worked by SUSE. So crippling SUSE, it doesn't directly help it unless you go with what Jeff is saying, which is trying to basically cripple the Linux effort entirely. This whole thing, I mean, I said it before, this is a poker game, and it's still too early to tell what's going to go on, but I think it's going to be an ugly show.
It's already ugly, it's clearly a legal poker game, and it's one that companies funded by Ray Norda have been playing for some time. They did it with DR-DOS. They're doing it now with Unix. And I'm sure what they're doing is they're looking for a settlement. They're hoping that IBM will do exactly what Microsoft did, which is settle out of court for some of money that will allow them to recoup some of whatever they may have sunk into whatever. What amazes me is that they're willing to, you know, that they're going out there and crapping on Linux to the degree that they are. It's just deeply weird. And what makes it even weirder for me is I feel like I know these guys, and I feel like, you know, it feels like a divorce, you know, it really does. It's sad. It's sad and strange.
A divorce is an interesting analogy. I was talking this over with a couple of people back today, and we didn't use the divorce analogy. What we were sort of looking at this the behavior of SCO as is the kind of behavior that family members have after a funeral, where they're all battling over the family.
Oh yeah, it's like at an estate hearing, a probate hearing, or whatever those are.
Yeah, but yeah. It's interesting how those kinds of analogies.
That's up. My stuff, you know. It isn't that possession is 9/10 of the law. It's 10/10 of divorce, you know, and that's really how it feels to me, having been through that, and you know, having been, you know, I think most of us are a little older. It's like, you know, you go through these things in life, and it has that feel, you know. It's like, you know, these aren't bad guys, but they're playing a rap here that's, you know, it's like almost like arguing through your lawyers too. You know, it's like the stuff you read about on the gossip pages. It's sad. It's just sad. I'm worried that IBM will settle, and what that might mean. I don't even know what that means, but I'm worried that their lawyers may say, hey, technicality, you know, it's going to cost this, let's run the numbers, it's going to cost us $50 million to do this thing, $60 million to make it go away, let's settle for that and call it a day. You know, and then what does that admit, or you know, what does that leave SCO in a position to do next?
Well, I think the problem with that scenario is that since IBM has not created its own Linux distribution, if it just sort of, you know, pays off the threat and sort of passes the buck to SUSE and Red Hat, then they're damaging the goods that they need to be in place to continue their business. So I would be kind of surprised if IBM just takes the short route, so to speak, to make it all go away.
It's going to depend upon the cost, though. I think Doc's right. They're just going to crunch the numbers.
Well, it sounds like if there's going to be any sort of settlement, it's going to be IBM outright.
Yeah.
If I'm IBM, I'm not settling with them. I'm basically going to say, okay, let's rock and roll.
Well,
IBM could basically tie. Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. On my phone, the little plug was coming out. Sorry.
IBM can, I can, IBM can basically bleed SCO on this thing. I mean, go ahead, make my day. You know, that's
Here's an interesting look on this story that was emailed to me today. Perhaps this is finally the time for Linus to actually come into the legal fray. And
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that.
He is the copyright holder. And
this is true.
He can deny the use of Linux to SCO. He can tell them cease and desist.
As long as they don't violate the general public license, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, and if I'm Linus's lawyer, I'm not going to advise doing that. I'm just like, do you want to get in? Do you want to piss off, you know, the most litigious people, you know, that are out there right now? I mean, I don't know. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
I think Linus is. I mean, just knowing Linus as well as I do, which I'm not going to say to that well, but. He tends to want to partition his interest from a whole lot of other stuff and let other people deal with the rest of it. That's user space. That's like legal space. He doesn't want to go there.
Yeah, his entire sole concern is the kernel itself, and he does not want to get involved. And he's showed, well, put it this way, he's shown a very, very strong resistance to getting involved in the politics and the other things.
Not his game.
He's a coder, and that's all he wants to do, and that's right where he belongs.
Yeah. I like to say that it's in capable hands with IBM, but I don't know. I mean, I think it is, but if you confine it strictly to legal concerns, I think we need to look at what a settlement would mean. Because I think if they go to court, SCO loses. There's just no doubt about it. I don't think there's any chance of that, of their winning. I've been wrong before. But if they don't go to court and IBM settles, what next?
Yep.
You know, and it's not so much, you know, what SCO's going to do next. Because, you know, they'll probably look at Linus and say, we can't sue that guy. You know, but they can... But they've left open something that may slow development in some way or slow adoption. Who knows? I don't know. I'd like to see some people work some scenarios on that.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. But let's move on to another story. But before we do, Arnie?
Yes?
Are you ready to lay your money where your mouth is? I'll bet you $100 they do find weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, let's not go down this road tonight, please. We've got enough contention here.
I'll agree with Jeff, and I'll add that even if they have to put them there themselves.
Yeah, that's it. That's right.
Hey, I'm willing to put the $100 on the line.
Yeah.
I'm
with Jeff on that one, and I'm not a fan of the war, but I think
guy's Hitler.
I know that.
Okay.
I just think it's pretty amazing you pull off the biggest heist in human history.
Oh, that billion-dollar
heist? Billion-dollar heist.
Oh, that is amazing. And, of course, you know, they left behind the billions and billions of dinars all over the country. there's a house they found that has rooms that were filled with dinars.
Yeah.
And the total value of all that money is, you know, maybe $100 with rooms.
At this point, yeah. Well, it has museum value now.
Well, they have nothing else to show in the museums.
Well, you know, that's pretty strange, too. I know we're way off topic here, but the latest is that that the museum guys had actually hidden most of the stuff already.
Yeah.
And
I hope
and so. A lot of the pilfering was not pilfering at all. It was that the museum guys, some of the curators, had hidden the stuff. And they've got it hidden somewhere, and they're not telling.
Yeah, well,
that's good.
Apparently, one of the museum curators was selling stuff on eBay.
You know, we're not going to know the end of this thing. I mean, there was another piece today on I forget where that was a whole new story on the soldier who was rescued. You know, that they had actually tried to ship her to like the hospital administrators had actually had her in a vehicle they were taking to the Americans, but the Americans shot at them, and they had to take her back.
Yep.
That was the Observer that published that one.
Yeah.
I also heard an Iraqi who witnessed the when they were captured, who said that although she's become an American hero, she was an insane woman. She jumped out of the truck with a machine gun and started shooting in every which direction and may have actually hit some of the people in her own crew.
Oh, my God. That makes it even weirder. Well, that'll...
So, it's interesting, though, isn't it?
You know, the interesting thing is that, there's that line that truth is the first casualty of war.
Absolutely.
I think actually facts are, because even the facts get blown up.
Yep.
You know, so what do you got to go on? It's sort of like pick your story and then your evidence and then fill in the blanks. So when it's over, it's going to be, it doesn't matter whether they find the weapons of mass destruction or not, because the people who will claim they never will have their evidence. The people who say they did will have theirs, and there'll be two competing stories.
And yeah, my comment was just looking for a good metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but. Okay, Russ, do you have any more stories of the week?
Yeah, well, as we're speaking of weapons of mass destruction, it's therefore appropriate that we talk about Microsoft. And the next link that we have out on the webpage has to do from the Oregonian, and written by Ken Barber, who was our guest back when Cooper Stevenson was on, talking about how that effort in Oregon actually was building some consensus from both Democrats and Republicans, but was finally killed by the Speaker of the House under pressure from out-of-state corporate entities, particularly one from Washington State. So take a look at this thing, and especially if you happen to be a citizen of the state of Oregon, please make sure that you know what went on here, and please ask for an accounting from your elected representatives.
Especially if your representative happens to be the speaker.
Yes, indeed. Next one up, a quickie from Dan Gilmore there at SiliconValley.com, talking about some of the foundation-type money which is now going into developing some open-source software. In particular, it cites Chandler, the brainchild of Mitch Caper, and some of the interesting things that are going on there. So I just wanted to glance on that one. It's actually pretty interesting. It also talks about Creative Commons and some of the other things out there. I think it's worth noting.
Okay.
Let me see. One other quickie. A piece over at O'Reilly Network about unfinished business, the one missing piece. And it talks about the need for Active Directory under Linux. And this is, according to the author here, is causing a lot of offices not to go into Linux. I found this piece interesting, not because I disagree that we really could use Active Directory under Linux simply to be as compatible as we can be, but in all of the feedback I got from readers of my column over at InfoWorld, there were only a couple, and I mean literally like two, maybe three, requests that I got saying that, you know, what's holding us back is Active Directory. There were a couple of people that wanted Active Directory-like functionality, but only a handful here wanted to interface directly with it. So I'm not sure that it's as big of an issue at the moment as is painted in this article. I think it would be nice to have, but frankly, the thing that I've come across that is perhaps the biggest hurdle from readers of my column were had to do with MS Access, of all things. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Last week.
About how having a quick little database with an idiot-proof GUI is actually holding back more people than anything else that I can find at the moment.
Sure.
And where I, or I think this, you know, Active Directory stuff would be really nice. I don't see it as being a huge issue at the moment.
But Russ, what do you think about something that came up and at the one of the things I was at recently? I actually lose track, but I was talking to one of the guys that was involved in developing NDS, the Novell Directory Service.
Right.
Which is widely considered about the best directory out there, but Novell still holds in a very proprietary fashion. What would happen if they open source that thing, if they release that thing?
Well, they're going to connect with Linux.
Well, connecting is different than releasing.
Right.
I know, but still, I mean...
Well, I'm just
wondering
what
that does.
It would
be really nice to see that, though.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether or not all of the virtues of Active Directory are not replicated, if not exceeded, in NDS, federated partitioning and all kinds of wild stuff like that.
Actually, printer management is superior in Novell
mm-hmm.
than with Active Directory.
Right. And the idea, I mean, I'm just thinking, because when I suggested it to this guy, he said, well, he wasn't with Novell anymore. He said, you're going to have a hard time convincing him to do that because they feel, very proprietary about it, except that, it would really do a lot of good to the world, I think, if they did that. And we had a nice big-ass directory that belonged to nobody that anybody could use. It would be handy to have, But I don't know. I mean, in a practical sense, it may be that too much is just tied up, will be tied up with Active Directory, and it would obviate anything anybody else would do anyway. I really don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either, but I don't think that at the moment, at least based on what I've heard, that AD compatibility is as big an issue as having an AD-like solution.
Yeah.
And, the Novell thing could be really interesting in that space.
Yeah, people don't mind paying money for good software and good solutions. And the proprietary links with Linux just as good as it links with proprietary stuff.
Yeah.
So go with it.
Yeah.
We're not against proprietary software. We're just against being locked out.
So is that it on your list?
One ultra quickie. There's a story over at New York Times about Software Bullet is sought to kill musical privacy. Piracy.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a number of times, so please go over there and take a look. In particular, it talks about some of the possible solutions that the various copyright holders are looking at doing, and some of them are more than slightly questionable as to their legality. But it is good to educate yourself on these things. So.
Okay, and I'm going to use this story as a segue, if you don't mind, into one of the main topics that were listed on tonight's show. We've already covered these Go draws the line in the sand. And the other one is the coming DRM conspiracy. I'm not one to begin throwing out conspiracy theories, but... the story, when I got it from you this afternoon, or when was it, last night, actually, I read the article, it really tailored into a series of interviews and press conferences that have been held over the course of the last few days, up to maybe a week ago. There has been, since the judge, 2 weeks ago, ruled in favor of Kazaa and the other...
Morpheus.
The other cross-loading tool. There has been a real concentrated effort that is working in concert, in my opinion. I think that there has been some meetings that have happened over the course of the last couple of weeks, and I think we're going to be seeing a new attack because late last week and this weekend, some new language has entered the equation, and I want everybody to listen for this over the course of the next couple weeks, because I'm going to start keeping track of the quotes and the comments that people make. But over the weekend, I was very disturbed by Hillary Rosen and Valente both having similar comments where they are upset that they are going to be barred from using the internet and how unfair the future landscape looks to the people in the IP industry. And it's poor, the attitude is now poor, poor us. We're being prevented from using the internet. They are trying to, again, make a new mind shift in the way people look upon the internet. There is absolutely no question that we're now seeing a concerted effort of all these IP groups are now starting to lay claim to the internet that it belongs to them. And it is theirs. And they are being cheated. They are being prevented from using their network, a tool that they should be able to use freely. I want everybody to just keep an eye out for this, because I think we're in for some extremely rough weather in the very, very near future. I know we won one 2 weeks
ago. Oh, it's going to be tough. It is going to be tough.
The big dogs are lining up big time. And I think that we really need to be careful. And we need to come up with arguments. And in fact, I'm going to offer.
Yeah, I heard today, and I can't confirm it, but they're actually talking about having people infiltrating the standards bodies.
Yep.
That getting DRM trolls, as it were, to infiltrate the standards bodies and essentially make the net one big IP bakery. That's really what the agenda is. They want to turn it into Hollywood. This is what Larry Lessig warned 2 years
ago. TV version 2, like you've predicted some years ago, Doc.
But they were even talking about that in their press release.
Yeah, they want it to be like Hollywood is, where you have to clear rights on every damn thing there is. And
you have to go to the source to get rights. They want to own the distribution channel because they control the distribution channel for movies now. They want to control the distribution channel for movies and music into all eternity. These people control it now. They don't want to give it up.
Right, and this is why, and this is a slight but not complete subject switch. I am not real happy with Apple's new music service. As popular as it is and all that, I mean, they sold over a million records in no time. But from what I understand, it's in, you know, their own proprietary format. You buy a record and it plays on an iPod and it plays on your Mac, but doesn't play on something else. Michael Robertson wrote a piece about that on the Lindos site in Michael's Minutes. There haven't been too many other people who have said this, similar things. And I haven't looked into it closely enough. I don't know what the story is exactly, but that's what I've heard, that it's, you know, these are not MP3s that you're downloading. These are something to run only on certain hardware. It's a vertical proprietary thing, very compatible with what the record industry wants.
Like QuickTime.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's not proprietary. It's AAC.
Tell me about that.
It's part of the new MPEG standards.
Okay. Well, maybe that's not so bad. I mean,
and also with the Apple, I've actually been following this, and you do have the rights to burn all your tracks directly to CD. So from there, you can do pretty much anything you want with them.
Tell me more about AAC. AAC. I've been told that it is, in fact, you know, the way it's implemented, it's only going to run on this stuff. Is it only going to run on this stuff because only Apple has implemented AAC?
Well, I think it has some sort of encryption built into it, but as far as patent legality goes, it is just as questionably legal as using MP3s are.
Okay. Well, maybe I take that back. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's I'd like to know more about that. If any listeners want to, you know, send me a note explaining it, I'd be interested in hearing. I've not written anything about it, so I'm just sort of thinking out loud here.
Yeah, I think it's a relatively good compromise, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's the guy to do it, and you know, I guess the question is, what compromises are we willing to find relatively okay?
Yeah, well, I think compromise is the operative word.
Right.
But I Hillary Rosen is not in the mood to compromise.
No. They're out to turn this into a big DRM machine.
And there's two people on two opposite ends of the tennis court. There's the IP people on one end and the phone companies and cable companies on the other end, and they're bouncing the ball back and forth between each other.
Right.
Okay? And they're going for dominance. Dominance on the network and dominance on the content.
Right.
You control the network, it's easy to control the content. And I know people are calling me crazy for calling this a conspiracy theory, but hey, I now honestly believe it after I've seen not only the actions of Rosen and Valencia this week, but some of the things that the phone companies have been pulling in the last 3 to 4 days. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to go into that. Doc, you've got a couple more stories up on the list.
That was one of them, basically.
There's a story up there from a couple of weeks ago that I want to point at because we never had a chance to talk about it. You don't have to talk about it other than the fact that I think we invented a new word here, and maybe not. Maybe this word has already been coined, and I'm a day late and a dollar short, but you sent us a link to, I think it was a blog posting called The New Advertising.
No, that was the Linux Journal Suit Watch.
Okay.
Which is now on the front page of Linux Journal, too. You can look it up there. It's in HTML there. It was sent out as plain text.
But anyways, when I started emailing that out back and forth to a couple other people to read it over, the comment got emailed back to me of that people need to get Clue trained, and maybe they should go through Clue training.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, I've started to hear Clue train used as a verb.
Yeah, it's interesting. Clue train actually has started to show up more and more in just ordinary language. And there was a piece somebody pointed to me that was in, I don't know, some British publication, Times of London or something, that said, you know, so-and-so was not on the Clue train. Mostly that's how it's used. You know, is somebody clued in or not, meaning they're on the train or off the train. That's sort of an interesting... It's an interesting thing, because if a word is in use for 5 years and with at least a certain number of references, then it is eligible for the Oxford English Dictionary, as I understand it. So I wouldn't mind, you know, having that as a legacy.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good legacy. Those guys have been working on that for how many years?
Oh, yeah.
How many decades?
Yeah, The Genius and the Madman is an outstanding book. But
that's an outstanding book. You're going to
read it. But the interesting thing with that is, and with the subject of that, is what Google has been trying to do, and to a lesser extent, or in a different way, Overture, which used to be Go.com, is also trying to do, which is create a form of advertising that people will actually like or seek out or at the very worst tolerate. In other words, something that has that is at worst neutral and at best something people welcome. This has never happened in advertising except with classifieds. Classifieds and Yellow Pages are the only advertising people will actively seek out. And in many ways, what Google has with the AdWords, those little paid results that they segregate off to the right side of the page.
I use those. Those are handy sometimes.
Well, that's the whole idea. They want those to have value. And it's explained to some degree in that piece. Google has been changing the model of that over the last year to one in which the advertiser pays for performance, but it disintermediates everything that used to be the advertising business, including all the agencies and all the media. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, we used to care when I was in the business about creative and media placement and all this kind of stuff. It's gone. It's not even there. You know, it's like you've got advertisers relating directly with end users with one intermediary, which is Google in one case. I dropped the phone again, and Overture in the other. And I noticed today when I went to Hoover's that are you guys still all still there?
Yep.
Okay. That Overture, which bought All the Web, also known as Fast, which is the done by a bunch of hackers in Norway and on BSD, it's kind of like a competitor of Google's, and AltaVista, which is developed originally by Digital. They bought those two search engines, and Overture's revenues this last quarter were just under $250 million.
Wow.
And their profit margin in the last quarter, their gross profit margin off expenses for putting this stuff up, was 99%. Okay. Very interesting business. And Google presumably is doing similarly well. And they told me they make money. And they are one interesting company to visit because you go to Silicon, it's like you've gone through a time warp back into 1998, and they're all these, you know, they get free food, and everybody looks happy, and the parking lot's full, and all around it is you know, empty buildings and God knows who, you know, where it all used to be Sun and SGI. Very interesting, but they're onto something with that, and I don't know enough about Overture to know what they're doing, but I understand it's in the same vein, and you know, advertising will be utterly changed by this. There's no doubt in my mind at all, because at a certain point, all those businesses that don't depend utterly on branding, like Pepsi and Budweiser, but rather on actually having sales to customers for something that the customer needs right now in a real way, this stuff is going to really kick.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true, because I no longer go to stores to shop. I just don't.
Yeah.
I go to Google, and I type in Hawaiian shirt, and when it comes up, I buy it.
Well, you know what it's like? It's a little like Costco. There's a really good piece in Newsweek right now about Costco. Do any of you guys go to Costco?
Yeah.
All of you?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Look, Costco is like, it has now become a cultural requirement that you go past the Costco, you go in, and you can't leave without having spent $300 to buy, you know, two TVs on a shrink wrap on a skid or something. You know, it's just an amazing thing. You know, geez, I want a gallon of macadamia nuts while I'm here. You know?
Or the ever popular cubic acre of toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, right. Who knew? Right. Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, I realize that I have enough shaving. I'm old enough now, and I have enough shaving cream that I bought the last time that it's possible that I've bought my last shaving cream for the rest of my life. You know, with the little gel thing, it comes. You know, a little goes a long way, right? You know, I just figured it out. These are good until I'm 75, right?
That's it. That's Costco's. You know, one of my favorite stories on The Onion was a title back when we were having trouble over in Yugoslavia there, and we got you got involved in that mess. The Onion ran a headline that said, "Dyslexic General Bombs Costco."
That's great.
Onion is precious.
Onion is great. I love the new Iraqi leadership to be chosen by Fox reality TV show.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. I love it.
And my favorite, since we're not on the air, we're on the packets, is Bill Clinton says he's emotionally ready to have blowjobs again.
Yeah. That's a good one now.
So I tell you,
we're completely off topic here, but it's okay. Like Costco. I mean, it just takes away.
That's okay. It is 50 minutes after the hour, so we're running really late, and
yeah.
Our guest is here. So I do want to hit a couple of stories real quick, just so we have a chance to explain them, so people can at least go out and read them. First of all, one of the highlighted ones, Graham Taylor controversy. It is, there's a link there to Bruce Perrin's original posting. Actually, Bruce sent an emailed draft to me yesterday morning on this story, and I immediately contacted this guy, Graham Taylor, and sought an interview on the show, but he couldn't make himself available. It is Europe, and so it's, what, 3 o'clock in the morning there right now. But anyways, this guy has been going around to IT industry association meetings and representing himself as an open source advocate, and has been signing letters as a pundit and representative of the open source community, and of course rankled Bruce to no end because no one's even heard of this guy, Graham Taylor. But it really turns out to be just another Computer Trade Association hack who's trying to make a name for himself, and so it really turns out to be probably much less of a threat than I think Bruce is worried about. But go ahead and follow the link, and I will try and get the email response that Graham Taylor sent to me this afternoon. I'll get that up on the site later on tonight. Arnie, you got a couple of real quick ones. Pick off the most important ones because we got to get to the guests.
Let me just cite them real quickly then. There's a couple articles in Software Development Times written by Jennifer DeJong, about corporate Linux and how Linux is changing the development landscape. Her basic premise there is that we need a GUI, eye candy development system on Linux, or else it's not going to be really adopted by in corporate America. I don't know if that's entirely true. Developers use tools. We have a pretty darn good tool set. But she does cite some good examples of Borland tools and IBM tools that are quite robust. Then there's the 2.6 kernel to push the envelope by Peter Galley on eWeek. Some of the links on our webpage are flaky. I don't know what happened. They were good yesterday. Apparently eWeek's having trouble over there. But you can click through to that, and that's a pretty good article explaining what the 2.6 kernel does. And I highly recommend that. Nopix squeezes desktop under one CD. There's in the eWeek print edition, it's a very short announcement, K-N-O-P-P-I-X. Nopix is a desktop Linux which has squeezed it on one CD installation, which is pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. And then, of course, the ever-popular Clueless of the Week Award for the Linux Show this week goes to eWeek Ziff Davis, editors who earned the title for their entitling a story about a new director at Red Hat, quote, Linux gets a new leadership, unquote. There's two links to that article. One, the eWeek version doesn't work.
They
but Extreme Tech
down.
Huh?
They pulled the stories down.
They pulled that one down now. Oh, wasn't that wonderful? Well, my comments on it was that Linux is not Red Hat, and you know, they just needed to fix the title on that one.
Yep. Okay, Kevin, do you have any product?
Apparently, eWeek doesn't like criticism.
No, they don't. Kevin, do you have any product releases for us?
Nothing terribly exciting, other than the Apple Music site, which isn't really a software product release, but seems to be doing pretty well, and we'll see what happens with that.
How about 2.6?
2.6 is still a long ways off.
Okay, but there's been a lot of news this week. Why don't you come up with some updates for us for next week's show? Let's take a short break, very short. It's almost 9 o'clock. And bring our guests back immediately after the break. So everybody kick back, relax. This has been segment number one, a very long segment number one of the Linux Show for May the 6th, 2003. Hang in there, everybody. We will be right back with our guest, Rob Page from Zope. We'll be right back. Hang in there.
While Karen are at a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through because my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite I got some knots. Tonight I'm so fine and happy. I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. My heart belongs to Daddy. Simply could it be better? My daddy, he treats us so well.
Okay, we're out. Back.
And it's 9 o'clock here in Chicago. We've let the train get away from us once again. Not as bad as last week. Last week we ended up having, what was it, guys? A two-hour-long show? Boy, we had a lot of news to cover last week, that's for sure. Even without a guest, we had plenty to cover. But we do have a guest this week on segment number two like we normally do. And I'm going to pass it off to Russ to do the introductions. Russ, take
all
over.
Right. Our guest tonight is Rob Page, who is the CEO and president of Zope. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Russ.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I realize that probably most of our listeners know what Zope is, but can you give us a nickel rundown on what it is in case some people don't know about your company and your software?
Absolutely. Zope is, in the shortest expression, an open source application server. Until early 1999, it was actually a commercial product of Digital Creations. We renamed ourselves about 2 years ago now. The majority of Zope is implemented in Python with some of the performance-sensitive sections written in C. It's a multiple portable platform, runs on Win 9X, NT, all the Unix variants, and Mac OS X. On top of it, we are increasingly getting a well-deserved reputation for content management. And we have a product called, an open-source product called the Content Management Framework, or CMF, which runs on top of Zope and provides extra services and functions like workflow and configurable user interfaces and security and things like that.
All right. What type of What type of license is being worked on with all of this, by the way?
Both Zope and the Zope CMF are licensed under the Zope Public License, or ZPL. The text of it is available at both Zope.org and Zope.com, and it is similar in spirit to the BSD license.
Okay. Has it been approved by the Open Source Initiative, by the way?
It has.
Okay, cool. And what sort of customers do you have for this? What organizations are using this?
All kinds of organizations are using Zope. Zope's downloaded in excess of 50,000 times a month. So the referrer logs and source domains range from, you know, the Fortune 2 all the way to mom and pop bike shops. We've got some case studies on our company site discussing HomeGain.com. HomeGain is a company in California, actually in Emeryville. They provide online real estate services, and they match up real estate brokers with people who want to buy and sell houses, and that is a Zope-powered solution. Possibly the most popular or most listened to radio station in the country is www.1010winds.com in New York City. They use a Zope-powered content management system to produce that site. And we recently finished some work for Silicon Graphics. They have a portfolio site to provide tech support for IRIX and their hardware products. And that's based on Zope. But the list goes on and on. Probably the most famous installation is at NATO, where they have, approaching 200 installations and 15,000 registered users for a global command and control application.
Wow. Wow. I have to ask the obligatory question, the one that we always ask when we get someone from a corporation that's creating open source software. How are you guys making money through all this? I mean, that's an impressive customer list. How do you pay the bills at the end of the month?
Of course, as obligatory as the question is, the answer is actually not the classic support and training answer.
Hmm.
Most of our revenues come from custom application development. So people, because we're a bottom-up sale, people will typically come to us pre-qualified with an interest and an experience with what Zope can do well and what it can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will say, gee, I downloaded Zope last January. I did a quick prototype for my boss. My boss really liked it. And now my boss wants 20 new features, but my job description isn't full-time software developer for Acme. So, Rob, can I introduce you to my boss, and can we do some business that way? I'm sorry.
That's one of the greatest and most undertapped business model for open source, in my opinion, and that is custom software development. And I've always thought that was a good way to go, and it's nice to see that some people are meeting success with it.
Yeah, we take it actually even a step further in that we are pretty insistent on sharing the intellectual property rights to what would traditionally be a work made for hire.
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of sharing it, we have an opportunity to either keep it in our consulting bag of tricks, or if it's infrastructure or what we call horizontal, we put it back into the open source product, whether it's in Zope or CMF or Zio.
And I imagine if a customer came up to you and said, gee, I want you to do us some stuff, but I want us to have it after you're through as our intellectual property, that there would be some way that could be accomplished as well.
Absolutely. Lately, it has been rare that we have had a customer that thoroughly sort of downloads the open source value proposition and continues to insist that they own the software. Software ownership it's sort of like parenthood, meaning sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad.
I know.
When you own software, you own the bugs too, and you own the roadmap, and you own the maintenance, and if people are willing to listen, we can make a case that only the most secret of sauces should be proprietary.
There you go.
Right. Frankly, that's been one of those things that people have argued for a long time, particularly when you get to things like on operating system level about people saying, well, won't so-and-so corporation run off and make their own Linux or BSD or whatever. It is an expensive as anything proposition to pull that off on anything more than a small scale. I've worked with DEC and Compaq and other places. Owning software, including owning the bugs, is expensive. And in fact, one of the biggest wins that people can have implementing open source solutions is that they can actually discharge some of the bugs by giving back fixes to the community.
Yep.
And so that's a great cost reduction.
Well, in fact, we have some what we call visible source software, which is we have commercial products. All of our commercial products come with source code, and we package maintenance for our product customers as a subscription to CVS. The notion being that at runtime, if we either address a issue or incorporate a feature that is a micro feature, they don't have to wait for a product release cycle. The flow works two ways, though, because to the extent that a customer wants to be able to innovate on one of these products, but they don't want the long-term maintenance burden, they can and have signed intellectual property joint ownership agreements that say, if I innovate on top of your platform and I give it to you, Zope Corporation, and you accept it, you agree to maintain it. And that's a pretty, interesting way to get even customers who are paying for the Mark Twain approach, right? Pay me a quarter and you can help me paint the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great notion. Can I ask you a further question on the content management side of the software? And that is really, you said you are using this, or somebody, one of your clients, is using this to manage a radio station. Was that correct?
That's correct.
1010 Winds in New York.
Okay, can you give me a little bit more detail on exactly what you mean by they're using it to manage content? Are they using this as a total solution for programming, or are they using it for tracking their BMI ASCAP records? What are they doing with the application?
So that's a good question. Zope is not, and I might hazard some optimism and say yet in the back office for radio stations. What Zope is doing, it is connecting to lots of their inbound syndicated content sources and providing them a web interface to create local content and publishing that on the web and integrating things like contesting, blogs, threaded messaging, etc., to create what they hope is a stickier experience for their listeners. So, as you know, typical TV and radio is a one-way medium, and by virtue of creating some interactivity, they can get longer stick times and increase ad revenue.
Interesting. Okay.
We have a question out from our IRC group. It says, is there a quick and easy way to give applications a JavaScript face at the user end while still using Tomcat for the back end?
Well, sure. That's not really a Zope question, but Tomcat can deliver content. JavaScript is really content in the body of a web page. So you can write any kind of JSP or use an include and include some JavaScript.
Right. Okay. I'm beeping. For people who haven't seen Zope in a while, what sort of new features have come along, say, in the last few months?
The leading features are that have come out probably in the last 3 or 4 months are a Unicode support. We've had a lot of uptake from Europe. You guys are probably as aware as I am about the political goings-on in Belgium and Peru with respect to them leaning from a federal perspective way in favor of open-source software. So our Unicode i18n, i10n support has really come a long way. Zope 2.6 is sort of casually called the community release because at the time, Zope Corporation was fortunately very busy on paying consulting contracts, and so we opened up the CVS repository and let the community cut the release themselves. Moving forward, 2.7 is on the drawing boards. It's just a matter of, you know, QA and packaging. That will introduce a what we call Z-config, a much improved packaging, installation, configuration, and build mechanism designed for and as the fruit of our clustering operations. We actually provide managed hosting services for enterprise Zope applications, and we found as we install, configure, and turn up that, you know, 57th web server, that keeping all 57 running and liking one another and with a baseline configuration was pretty tough. And so 2.7 is going to address that. Also, you may know that the Python Labs team actually works at Zope Corporation. There have been lots and lots of improvements in the Python core language. Zope 2.7 will actually make the official move to Python 2.2 as its core. And then finally, for those that can't live without tools like Emacs, we will be including support for restructured text in 2.7.
Wow. Oh, that's a lot of good stuff going on, that's for sure. I also noted on one of your, or some press release recently, that you apparently are doing some partnering with some other companies like Nuxeo. Are there any things that you can talk about there?
In general, we are fortunate to have a very active commercial third-party community. There on the Zope.org site, there's a page for Zope solution providers. And last I checked, there were over 100. And these people provide local technical support, local custom application development, commercial products like Silva, CPS. Plone is an open source product, but it's provided by one of the Zope solution providers. Lots of people are in the hosting game. So while any individual or specific partnership, is between the two companies, in general, the uptake and the confidence with which other companies are starting to base and create Zope-based businesses is pretty amazing. I'm tickled by it. And again, the uptake and traction in Europe is better than it is here.
It seems to me that a lot of the blog space is being written in Zope, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that all over the place. It's
yep.
Powered by Zope, powered by Zope. Well, a lot of these little hundreds and hundreds of blog pages, and that's got to be a lot of good pre-publicity for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and these guys are talking about it, too.
Good stuff, for sure. Are there any other particular messages that you want our listeners to know about Zope and where it's going?
I'd like to share a pretty amazing story. For those that are Zope devotees, they know that we're in the middle of working on Zope 3, and Zope 3 is a ground up rewrite that intends to learn the lessons and mistakes of Zope 2.x. And one of the most interesting things about that development is that it is largely community-based. We run these events called sprints, and one of the most successful was in Charleroi last fall, where we had, at no expense to Zope Corporation, and in fact, the group paid for our chief technology officer, Jim Fulton's, travel and expenses. We had 30 people spend 8 days in a room, the fruits of which, the IP rights to the fruits of that session were assigned to Zope Corporation under the recognition that if we ended up putting it into the core software or using it at all, we would have to release it under the Zope public license. And that accomplishes two things. One, it is a community-friendly way of aggregating development resources, and by virtue of doing it in person, you have the rapid XP-ish kind of experience. And so the session was unusually productive. Mm. And by virtue of taking the extra time to be careful about intellectual property, we and those other 100 Zope solution providers can offer with some sanity the necessary indemnity provisions that big corporate customers need in order to adopt open source software. And, you know, couldn't have been a more timely topic given, you know, SCO and IBM's tussle.
Right. Yeah, that is quite true, and I think a lot of us who are used to being on the technical side of the fence don't really appreciate the size of that bugaboo.
That's a huge issue. When we are doing consulting gigs, you know, over $100,000, intellectual property indemnification and our ability to warrant copyright or patent infringement is huge. And, you know, quite frankly, it's a liability in Zope 2 because we haven't been as careful as we are now being in Zope 3.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
No SCO in your future.
That's right. That's right. Actually, we're not no IBM in our future, right?
There you go.
Well, that pretty much finishes out what I have here, gentlemen. Anyone else want to throw anything else in?
I've got more questions on the content management side of the equation. Looking at your customer list, you've got some pretty good-sized people that are using this as a publishing tool, content management tool. Are you in the process now, and maybe this is part of the Zope 3 that is coming, are you going in the direction of tailoring these, or tailoring the next version to really be have that newspaper look or the blog look? Is that really what your goal is for the next generation of the product?
The next generation of Zope, or Zope 3, is not going to be focused or tailored on any particular vertical market. Our consulting business and our product business, on the other hand, benefits from critical mass in vertical industries. And so we have a particular credibility in broadcast TV and radio, and a particular credibility in print pubs, both magazines and newspapers. And so you may and would have, had you attended the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, and if you attend the National Association of Newspaper Convention in Vegas, find Zope Corporation there.
Okay. Then I'll ask you the next question I plan on asking anyways, because I've been looking at some of the sites that are Zope sites, some of the print media sites that are Zope sites, and they don't really look like they've been developed with the normal tools that print media type folks like views, in particular Quark Express. A lot of the content management tools have really not addressed the issue that 99.9% of the people in the print media business use Quark Express as their original document creation tool. And so it's not particularly easy to migrate documents into, you know, online content management tools. Is that part of what you're doing in the consulting space, or is the actual Zoop tool going to address that kind of stuff?
Great question. The Quark has some client-side tools that don't really scale economically for an entire newsroom that will turn Quark into well-formed and valid XML. That said, that's our preferred mode. There's a word in the print industry called the de-quarkification, which is, you know, essentially the liberation of words that are otherwise held hostage in Quark.
Yep.
Our experience, actually, though, is that for newspapers, relatively few are paginating in Quark. They're still paginating with HP and/or VAX-powered systems from ATEX and CCI, and we have spent a non-trivial amount of time trying to tame those proprietary systems and get output that is valid and well-formed and parsable, and where it's not, providing a, you know, simple interface for humans to go in and fix the bugs that we find in parsing. The general challenge of integrating tightly with desktop tools and yet being able to harvest the content is actually not getting easier. There is some buzz about the upcoming XML-based file format in Office, and we are cautiously optimistic that that will get us at a lot of the desktop content. But, you know, applications and suites open like OpenOffice notwithstanding, people like Quark are still hiding their content in opaque binary files that are not easy to parse on the server, certainly not a Linux server without lots of COM or DCOM baggage.
Yep. Now, when you are reading off the list of OSs that you had ported to, did I not hear OS X?
No, you did hear OS X.
Okay, yes, I did. Okay, because I didn't know whether you said it or not. Okay, well... Well, good. Then you are definitely well versed for the print media industry. That's for damn sure. If you're accommodating all those macrophiles out there in the media business, that's for sure. Well, very interesting. Do you have a target? I know doing a complete bottom-up rewrite is. Oh, boy, that's gut-wrenching. But do you have a target date?
I actually don't know if I'll be out of school with our CTO in saying this, but our hope is that we have a beta milestone release by the end of June. We are actually also working very hard to have a final release by the fall, and we expect that a release that will run current Zoop 2.x applications with a minimum of fuss or conversion will be available around February or March of 2004.
Wow. That's quick.
Well, we've actually been at this a while already. And I won't admit in public to how late we already are on it.
Well, those deadlines, original preliminary deadlines, are best kept as internal company documents.
That's right, but
you just hope that Eric Raymond doesn't get a hold of them and publish them as Halloween 14.
That's right, but you know the community can beat those dates out of you, Frank.
Good old Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we are up to that time. It has been very enjoyable having you on the show. Please keep us apprised as the the progress. Russ, if you can keep focused on it, I'd really like to download a beta when it does become available and play around with it, because it looks like a very interesting content management tool. I honestly have not tried using it myself, so I'm looking forward to the opportunity of testing out the beta when it becomes available.
Great. Well, thanks for inviting me to the show. It was great.
Oh, okay. There's one other question out on IRC that I see here. It says, can Zope be compared to JBoss?
That's a leading question. Yes, fundamentally, JBoss is an application server for Java programmers. Fundamentally, Zope is an application server for Python programmers.
There you go.
Okay. That works.
Good luck to Zope.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And thank you, Rob, for joining us.
Absolutely. Good night.
Okay. And really, that brings us up to the end of the show, so I'll just not waste any more further time. You know what? I'm going to waste some further time. Because here, this is really funny about can you compare Zope to JBoss? There's an irony. How about comparing the representatives of Zope and JBoss? There's something to talk about, huh? But anyways, we won't go into that right at the moment. Anyways, this has been the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show. We will be back same time next week with lots and lots and lots more stories. I encourage everybody to go to our website, www.thelinuxshow.com. Click on the support link. Send us some PayPal dollars if you like what we do, or use the register our domain with a registration partner. Do something that will fit within your budget, but will continue to keep us on the air. We appreciate all the help we got. We got actually a number of people just during the middle of the week who were just linking up to the site from last week's 2-hour marathon show and sending us a few contributions during the week. So if you're listening live tonight, thank you very much. But we will be back same time next week. Until then, we're out of here.